Memorable Monsters is the ultimate 5th edition monster resource. 50 versatile monsters and NPCs for your stories, brought to you by the best-selling authors at Crit Academy. From an ancient, powerful dragon who seeks to subjugate the kingdoms around its lair, to once powerful wizards who flew too close to the sun and are now cursed. Fill your world with unique and memorable creatures that your players will be talking about for years to come. From fun and whimsical to forlorn and intriguing, bring your world to life with these monsters and NPCs. Each monster will include a plethora of examples for weaving them into your campaigns with fully fleshed out detail. Monsters are more than just stat blocks. Help bring this project to life. Become a backer on Kickstarter today and share with your friends on social media.
Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I am your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
Our show may not be suitable for young children, but neither is our D&D games.
Yeah.
Nope. No.
No. I'm very bad. I actually just had our patron game. We do a monthly extra credit patron game, and I've had to not stream the last couple episodes because of the nature of what's going on and the nature of the module I'm running.
Oh, of course.
So it's just like, so I was talking to one of our patrons. She's like, "That's awfully sensitive of you," and I'm like, "Yeah, it is."
And until I say it out loud to my players.
Right. I'm just like, Sensitive, to a point. I'm still a dickhead most of the time. But oh, man. I am really excited for today's episode, you guys. But before we get into rules of storytelling, or rules for storytelling by Pixar, which is an awesome source for storytelling, one of the biggest animation companies in the world, right? Oh, everyone knows Pixar, right?
I would assume by this point, yeah.
Right? I would like to take a minute to let everyone know that our Kickstarter is live and is still running as of today, August 16th, 2020. And we are at 77% of our goal with a couple weeks left to go. I'm super excited.
Steadily getting there.
Yeah. I think we got this.
Yeah, I hope so. Several of the mentors that have been, you know, walking me through the process and everything really think that we're going to hit it. And I'm starting to really think that, too. So yeah. Thank you guys so much. Yeah. If you don't know, our Kickstarter is Memorable Monsters. In my games, I truly believe monsters are more than just stat blocks. So we've been pitching this Kickstarter idea for around for a while and finally pushed the button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the plan is to deliver 50 fully fleshed out NPCs and monsters, not just, you know, a meat shield, but they've got flaws, backgrounds. They got a variety of ways that you can include them in your stories and campaigns. If it sounds like something you're interested in, head on over to the Kickstarter.com/Crit Academy or go to CritAcademy.com and click on it. If you want to know more, we actually covered an episode where we covered one of the monsters in pretty good depth.
Mm-hmm. I believe that was recently. 2 weeks ago?
It was a goblin, but look what you could do with that goblin with your own stuff.
It was pretty great.
We had meant to do two that day, and we only did one.
Because there was so much time. Yeah. Which also is another benefit. If you actually go to the Kickstarter,
samples.
There's samples there that you mm-hmm. can pick up as well. So
the first one's free.
It's like crack. Hopefully you'll come back for more.
Also, do note that these aren't just for D&D settings as well. You can probably mix some stuff up about them, and you can probably use them in any like RPG tabletop adventure as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The only thing that makes it 5th edition is the stat block.
Yep.
Yeah. Everything else is system agnostic, so which is also another selling point, I think. So it occurs to me now that maybe we could have did some stretch goals to add like Pathfinder stat blocks or something like that, but
could have been interesting for
hindsight,
sure.
Hindsight, right?
Right.
But I want to thank everyone.
Already halfway through it, and we're like, oh, you know, we could have done that.
Could have did this, that, and the other thing.
And here I'm going, but which Pathfinder edition?
Oh, well.
I mean, I know second's out now, but let's face it. first was out for a while. It still has a very dedicated fan base.
That's true. So hopefully you'll check that out. Or if you're looking for some free fat loots, just head on over to our website at crickhammy.com. We also have a little sign up for our newsletter, and it will send you a link and a link with 7 of our favorite D&D resources to use that are free. So check it out.
Woohoo!
That being said, I want to thank Crit Nation for joining us today here at Crit Academy Studios, where everything's made up and your roles don't matter.
Yep, that's right. Your roles are like a D&D campaign without interesting storytelling, which is probably really easy to do.
A dungeon delve, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Very much.
I love those.
Some people, those...
I was going to say, I'm still kind of in that boat where I'm like, you know, I'm okay with a good old dungeon delve every once in a while.
But well...
My good story does go a long way.
I'm glad you guys think that, because I really would like to do a book that's pure dungeon delves. Fourth edition had a book called Dungeon Delves, and it basically gave a short paragraph of what's going on, who the bad guys, what their motives are, and then it's like 3 regular encounters to get that out of the way. So it was made great one shots. It'd be kind of fun to do. Yeah, it's really cool. So that's something I would like to look into in the future. So,
could be fun.
So moving on to our Let's Talk About Blank segment. Every week there's always new D&D news coming out, or we get questions submitted from listeners, and always something unique we want to talk about, kind of in the vein of what's happening. So Chris Perkins tweeted, "Icewind Dale, Rime of Frostmaiden is a fully of terrifying secrets, some of which lie buried under ice and snow." And he put a picture of this city, this round, flat, circular city with this tweet. Now, you can find it at critacademy.com/post/episode183 and see this image for yourself.
With a tall spire in the middle, too.
Yes. I'm going to be honest. To me, this doesn't look like a picture that belongs in a fantasy realm. It looks like a picture that belongs in
like a sci-fi setting. Yeah, I was like, this looks alien more than anything. It looks weird.
And really, that's really what caught my eye, is this stood out. If this is content in the upcoming release,
to me, this
suggests that either we're getting details more on the Githyanki or the Githzerai or the Mind Flayers or any other astral plane, sci-fi-ish, spelljammer type stuff.
Mm-hmm. It actually reminded me a lot of like Atlantis from the Stargate franchise.
Yes, it does. I can see that. That is, you hit that spot on. That's pretty good.
Almost looks like this used to fly at some point. Maybe. Just because of the way it's like landed in there.
It's kind of like a
It's all cockeyed in there.
Yeah.
Almost if it wasn't there by default. Like maybe it fell there.
Yeah. It's really weird.
Maybe it's a big giant ship. Like the ones from Independence Day.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm leaning towards.
Because it's hard to get an idea of the sense of the size of this thing. But I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, that's true.
Because this means they're delving back. And honestly, it kind of makes sense. I'm not saying I'm right, but with Baldur's Gate 3's focus being on Mind Flayers and Githyanki, it would make sense for them to jump into that next, that direction.
That almost looks like a sort of like hologram kind of thing in the middle of it.
A little orange thing?
Yeah.
I can see that. It doesn't, some sort of power source maybe too.
Yeah, it looks like it just kind of floats there.
Yeah, so this is really cool. This is very futuristic-y, alien type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited. This obviously is, I would assume, is from the book. That's coming out.
Yeah.
You guys have any other comments on this other than I'm super excited?
I am curious to see where it's going to go.
Yeah, me too. And how it ties into the Frostmaiden stuff. Because to me, this is a great piece of content, because if you think about it, the movie, the Transformers movie, you know, they found Megatron, and spoiler alert for an old-ass movie, they found Megatron frozen in the ice. What if this is something similar? What if it doesn't lead to Spelljammer, but leads to, like, other alien tech, or the introduction of just, like, new science and technology and stuff?
Almost sounds like it could, like, almost transverse into, like, an Eberron campaign, like Eberron Light.
Ooh, that would be cool.
So, like, you have, like, this almost, like, pseudo-technology that's in, like, the Forgotten Realms, but, like, it's just barely enough where it's, like, believable.
Yeah, that's really, really great.
Or, who said the city's dead? or completely dead.
Yeah, there might be creatures there. I guess we don't know. It's just an image, so.
Right.
But I was really impressed with this. I'm really excited. Chris Perkins always puts out really good teasers, hooks out there. Yeah. I'm going to get you. Gotcha, bitch.
Very interesting.
I think that'll do it for our Let's Talk About Blank segment.
Cool.
I'm really excited for this. I really want to make sure I get this book as soon as possible. Rime of the Frost Maiden. So, did anybody know the release date by chance?
No, I'm not sure.
So, before we move on to our Unearthed Tips and Tricks, we have a product to give away. I would actually
September 15th.
It's September 5th. That's soon. That's really soon. That's a month away.
Yeah, that's not far at all.
I want to give a huge shout out again to Chris Vanderlinden from Loresmith. Not only does the guy make amazing content, but man, has he been such a great mentor in my entire journey through the creative process, through just regular writing up through the Kickstarter, and he's really had our back. So, dude, thank you. You are awesome. Because of people like you and Jeff Stevens and JVC Perry, we really have come a long way. You guys are awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yep. And he gives away stuff to you guys.
Yeah, like the Modular Dungeon Tiles, the Arcania set. and if you aren't already aware, the Modular Dungeon Tiles are an easy way to create your own beautiful digital maps. The Arcania set, in specific, lets you make dark, shadowy dungeon maps rich with the fumes of arcane secrets. Very much so like this picture that we've been kind of staring at almost, honestly.
Right.
So yeah, our winner today is Riley5150.
Congratulations. If you enjoy the product, please consider picking up Loresmith's other content. His Remarkable Inns and Remarkable Shops are some of the best system agnostic content you're ever going to find. It fits in every single person's...
You can put it in a starship. You can put it in a home. You can put it in a hotel. You can put it in modern times.
You can put it in the box with a box.
Yes. All right, well, congratulations. We hope you enjoy it. If you didn't win, have no fear. Head on over to critacademy.com/loresmith, and we got some free goodies for you. Digital terrain, some one-shots, all that good stuff. Now, on to the main topic, the meat of the podcast sandwich, if you will. Pixar's 22 Rules of Storytelling. Now,
22, oh God.
Yeah. Now, I didn't know this. I first saw this as a meme somebody put up. It basically, I'd say meme, but it was just a post of an 8x11 image with all these things chalked on it. I was not aware that this was actually a full book that has been written. So you can actually find that link in our show notes as well. I wish I would have known that because I would have tried to get my hands on the whole book, but that's okay. Hopefully,
we have 22 points in my work.
Yeah, this actually compiles what it focuses anyway. So what we're going to do is we're going to each read it. Maybe we'll just toss a few discussion points on each point and see where this goes. The reason I like this is because Pixar is a subsidiary of Disney, one of the largest corporations in the world that focuses around storytelling. If this is something that they're passing out to their employees when they write, that says a lot about the value.
Right.
But hopefully this is a resource that will apply both to dungeon masters, game masters, and players as well. At least we hope. So,
can agree to that.
Number one, admire characters for attempting more than what their successes have been. What does this mean to you guys?
Sounds like if I wanted to put this in like a D&D context, we'll say. So if I'm imagining like a player character, previously they haven't been able to maybe they haven't been able to get to the big bad guy, but they're at least always pushing to get to the big bad guy, right? And I think the idea is that you should push the idea forward that they are actively attempting this, and so that way you can look at them and be like, oh wow, like they even throughout, like even though they haven't been able to get to where they want, they're still at least attempting like the grand goal that they're trying to get.
So even though they haven't reached a tier of success that they want, they're actively striving to continually get to it.
Because I'm assuming it has like, this is the idea of like a lot of like smaller goals that they may have been trying to get to, that giant, you know, the big goal, the end goal,
the top of the mountain.
Exactly. And it's even though they may have like slipped maybe quite a few times, but they're still actively trying to get to the top of the mountain, essentially.
This reminded me of, I just shared a quote. I do that often. I'm sorry for everyone. I love Stormlight Archives and Brandon Sanderson's guy.
I just got some amazing book, shit yesterday. So
shit's good.
It is good.
He goes, it's somewhere along the lines of, if I fall, shit, now I got to find it because I don't want to misquote it. What do you think about this? Why I find that?
Overall, I believe the point they're trying to make here is a character is not just what they are known for. There is more to that person than that.
I can agree with that. That's a good way to interpret
that's
that.
That's a good way to put
like
that.
They have characteristics. They have likes. They have dislikes. They have a background. They have where they came from. They have the people around them. They're have not, their qualities.
They're not just the successes that they have. They are more than... I can see that. I like that.
Going back to what you said about their not quite reaching their goals, the quote is, I will take responsibility for what I have done. If I must fall, I will rise each time a better man. That to kind of what I envisioned when you mentioned that.
And Severit here in chat says it creates empathy because we all know what it feels to live life. It makes them relatable.
Yeah, I can agree to that. I like that. I think we got some good out of that. That's some really good points you guys made.
It's a good point one. Want to go on to point two?
Yep.
Okay. It says here, keep in mind what's interesting to you as an audience, not what's fun to do as a writer. They can be very different.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God, yes.
I think all of us can immediately say, yeah, like that is...
We all have our own likes and interests.
Yeah, and we've heard the tales of the Dungeon Master who says, it's my story, it's my world. If that's not interesting to the players, it doesn't matter how great and exciting your world is. And I think that happens too often. I don't necessarily know that it's a flaw, but I think it's a stepping stone to improving. If you don't recognize that you're doing that, though, you're going to be stuck on that, and you might be spend weeks or months or years in a campaign that only you care about and that the players don't.
And it's not like it's a malicious thing either, because there's the vast majority is the fact that they don't realize that they are doing this, right? They think that, you know, what they're doing is cool and that everyone's actively engaging into it. But obviously, if they never venture out, all they're sitting in is just an echo chamber in themselves. And all they hear is, I'm doing a good job to themselves.
Right.
I think a great example I read about one time that illustrates this is like Chuck Lorre, like a producer over in Hollywood who's known for a lot of sitcoms, such as Big Bang Theory is one example.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the author of this article is talking about how he was involved with a sitcom pilot. And their test audience was watching, and all test audience members have a remote in their hands, if you will, where that basically means if I press the button, I'm bored, I'm changing the channel.
Okay. Oh,
and
interesting.
And as they're watching the sitcoms are going through the scene, one of the writers said, my favorite joke's coming up. Yeah, I love this joke too. The joke was told on screen, and nearly every single person in the audience hit the button.
Oh, jeez. That's gotta hurt.
Yeah, that's rough.
So you can see why, like, that's what I thought of when I read this. Yeah. Just because you like something doesn't mean everyone's going to like something.
And I think that's why it's important, Session Zero, and to continue asking the players what they're thinking of the campaign, what they like about it. Like, at the end of most of my games, I always try to ask, what did you like about it? Because it makes it easier for me to try to focus on that when I can. Now, once again, running modules makes that a little harder sometimes, but for the most part, I know what drives every player. Right. So.
Oh, that makes sense.
Ian, you want to tell us about number three?
Trying for a theme is important. Whoever you won't see what the story is about until you're at the end of the story. Got it? Now rewrite.
If I'm understanding this, it's saying theme is important.
Yep.
And it should be carrying out through the entire story. That might be however.
Yeah.
Well, I just copied this from a meme, so. It says, whoever you won't see... However, you won't see what the story is about until you're at the end of the story. Got it? Now rewrite it.
Yeah.
So to me, that says that whatever theme you choose should stick through the entire end of it. And then...
I think that's the idea, right?
Yeah. Because I definitely, like, seen in some stories or books, what have you, that introduce a plot twist, which was so out of left field. I'm like, what?
Like, why did they do that? They didn't stick with what they had going for them, basically.
Okay. I'm probably going to piss off a few people by mentioning this, but... I think all three of us at least have seen Goblin Slayer.
I've seen some of it, yes.
Yep. Like, I remember, like, the first episode, There was a scene in there that people that pissed off a lot of people. Now, I believe that people hated it just because it came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You'd be like, oh my gosh, why would you do such a thing? And me, however, I'm like, I love this! Not because... And don't get me wrong, the scene was horrible, but to me, it heavily implied a grim, dark setting or a series.
Which is what it was going for.
Yes.
Which is what I love, because you don't see those too much, and I can appreciate those. But then every episode afterward was standard action fantasy series. I'm like, I was given a setting and a setup in the first episode. We saw nothing of that afterwards.
So that's a really good example of not sticking with the theme from beginning to end.
And I think that's why people like Berserk in specific a lot more, is because it does stick to that. Like, this is an awful world, and that this dude's trying to live his life, and it's not working.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Guts life sucks.
It isn't pretty from day one to day end.
like Lily, even the day he was born completely sucked for him.
Yeah. So
I'll just leave it at that.
Right. So number four here is... I think this is cool because this reminds me of, like, almost an outline of how your story should go. Once upon a time, there was blank. Every day, blank. One day, blank. Because of that, blank. Mm. Because of that, blank. And until finally, blank. So I feel like you could toss any subject into this and have a story come out of it. So, once upon a time, there was...
A goat.
Every day, that goat ate grain. One day,
he ate cheese,
and because of that, he learned he liked it better than grain.
Grain, yeah.
And then he realized what. Until finally, he realized, what else am I missing in life?
Oh, I like what you did there. Yes. To me, this is like an idea for an outline, and it basically everything goes back to the previous event, and now you have like a system. A stepping stone to the end, right? And that basically is a good way for any sort of NPC building.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm going to use the Batman villain Arnold Schwarzenegger when he played
Mr. Freeze,
where he says, "Once upon a time, there was a doctor. Every day he helped people. One day his wife died. And because of that, he changed his focus on curing her. But because of that, he had to become a villain because he didn't have enough money until... Because of that, he ran out of money until finally he had to steal it and become a villain." I mean, because that's really his whole story.
It is pretty much it, yeah. It really is, down at the bone.
Yeah.
To the bare bones, that is pretty much it, yeah.
Right.
Interesting. I like that. Next one?
Yep.
Sure. Simplify, focus, combine characters, hop over detours. You'll feel like you're losing valuable stuff, but it sets you free.
What do you guys think this means?
Refine the process.
Okay.
Throw out the stuff you don't need. And one great example I can think of about this, actually, is a few weeks back, we mentioned the movie Upgrade.
Okay.
Which is a sci-fi cyberpunk movie. And it was a very low-budget movie, like $3 million. Something along those lines. $3-5 million, which is in Hollywood chump change for making a movie.
Right.
Right.
But in exchange, the producer could do anything he wanted for the movie, but that low budget made him go back to the script. Okay, don't need that. That action scene, I guess that doesn't actually add to the plot.
So he got rid of the garbage out of it.
And, and it also made him rethink a few things or how things were going to look visually, too. And he's like, but as a result, it created a more grounded product that seemed more believable.
Yeah.
I think this happens a lot with players and Dungeon Masters, because there's some players who will write this very long character arc for their stories and not leave any room for the DM to play around in, and more importantly, less likely to remember because there's so much, you know, going on there. DMs create all this entire world and all these settings. They flush out all these cities, but really the entire campaign takes place in this one area.
Yep.
So all that time was while that could have been done with bullet points, you know what I mean? And I really feel like that's what it's talking about here.
Hmm.
What is your character good at or comfortable with? Throw the polar opposite at him. Challenge him. How does he deal with it?
This is a very important thing, and I see it happen a lot honestly in a lot of fiction that I read, where the main character is constantly, like, it is very obvious what his strengths are. So, for instance, I'll go back to Brent Weeks and then his Night Angel trilogy. His strengths are that he He worked very hard at what he did, and he ended up becoming, well, one of the world's greatest assassins at a kind of young age, because he just kept going at it. That was his thing. And then the thing that he could never do, though, was actually written on every single front cover of the book. There was always like a line that said like, a perfect assassin has no friends, or a perfect assassin has no identity, and stuff like that. He very, very clearly wanted to keep all of his friends and wanted to keep this life that he had. So every single time, and it's brought up time and time again throughout this book, where he's constantly having to do these things that, as an assassin, this wouldn't really be an issue, right? But because he's more than that, he's a person, he is a person who had survived very awful things, he wants to keep whatever friendships he has around, because that's inevitably what makes him human.
And now, because of that, doesn't he run into a lot of challenges because he chooses to give those up?
And to the point where actually more people usually die, and sometimes the friend still dies anyway because he actually struggled for too long and he couldn't make the decision fast enough, and he ended up losing both things anyway, which is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, there's a series I read that's really, really good. I'm not going to say which one because it's a huge spoiler. But in it, these heroes, they're out there protecting people. That's their whole shtick. They're there to protect and save people in the world and defend it from these monster sorts of things, until they find out that, in fact, it's not their home. They're aliens that came to this planet and took it from the people they deem monsters.
Woo.
And so all those people give up their power and abandon their responsibility because they believe they don't have a it's not their responsibility. They conquered this land.
Jeez.
Which is great. So,
which opens up a lot of questions too.
Yes.
We go from there.
Yeah. That's really good. Do you want to take the number 7, Ian?
Come up with your ending before you figure out your middle. Seriously, endings are hard.
Yes.
Get yours working up front.
That is a very big thing. I used to write a lot back in high school, like hundreds of pages, to the point where I probably could have, if I had refined it and maybe actually got like an editor and stuff, I probably could have made something out of it, but I didn't. The ending was always the thing that I struggled with. It's how do you end a journey? You know, this thing that you're always constantly building up for. And you want this, you know, this big, you know, satisfying conclusion. How do you present it? Like, how does it feel satisfying enough when you've gone through hundreds of pages worth of stuff? You know what I mean? And how do you summarize that in like a chapter?
And also, it can also be hard to get it to go where you want. That's one of the things that I struggle with
as a big thing
game
too.
Master is I'm not super great at connecting all the action that the players have done into the story that I want. I wonder if I start at the end with the goal, then it doesn't matter what they do, because I can, in theory, let them make whatever choices and then reroute the story and the actions based on the characters that takes them there. Instead, I'm always wondering, okay, how do I want this to end? Here's all the stuff they've done. If I just say, this is what's going to happen, it doesn't... Well, see, now I kind of feel bad, because then that's taking away any impact the players do. So I feel like there's got to be a balance there for at least RPGs.
Like, I remember when I took a creative writing class back in college, and kind of in a similar vein, I remember one short story I wrote in particular when I shared like the early drafts with some classmates and a few friends. Everybody's like, this seems really cool. I'm curious where this is going to go. And I'm sitting going, me too.
Yeah.
Like, because, and that's something I still, even now, and I'm sure you know this, struggle with to this day, because I feel like I do a good job of coming up with a great generalized idea of something. I just have never any idea how to flesh out or where to take it.
Yeah.
The big issue I think a lot of writers probably run into is where they want to take it. I always feel like people generally have this idea, right? Maybe even just like a bunch of core concepts that flesh out this idea. But where do you take this bubble that you've made, right?
Right.
How do you expand it into something more concrete? And I think that is definitely the issue. So I agree with this. Definitely. Get the ending done, because honestly, you can always fill stuff in the middle.
Yeah.
And you can always reroute everything, kind of like an electrician. You can always rewire it back to the end.
Which actually is a nice segue right into the next question there, Austin.
What does it say here?
Number 8.
Number 8, okay. Finish your story. Let go, even if it's not perfect. In an ideal world, you have both. But move on. Do better next time. That's fair.
I kind of get that, too, just in the standpoint of... How many creators have you seen just become so fixated on something, they just won't leave something alone and keep changing stuff around, but as a result, they're probably making it worse in the process.
Yeah. That or how much time has been lost on other potential better projects that could push. I'm guilty of that in my writing. There's a few times where I went and did something else without finishing something else, so it took me longer to finish that project because I gotta, ooh, let's go do this instead before I forget, you know? So finish your story no matter how bad it is. If you don't like it, okay, what don't you like about it? Fix that in the next one.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Which is why I think it might be easier just to do, like, simple short stories or even just, like, simple character arcs. Like, even if you just remove the your story aspect, say, like, finish your character, you know, like, let go of it even if it's not perfect, you know?
Yeah.
Because,
I agree.
Characters aren't perfect. They're not meant to be. And
that's what
neither
makes
should
them
the story
amazing.
Be.
That's
yeah.
why flaws are so great.
Yeah.
Watching people overcome their flaws is one of the greatest parts of stories, in my opinion.
That made me think of a book series, The Black Company, where the author talked about how he lost count how many times he turned in a draft to an editor, only for the editor to come back, hey, this is not proper grammar. Dude, it's written from the first-person perspective of a guy who's not educated. It's not going to be proper grammar.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I'm on that road trip. Actually, Alicia was just telling me, you're not allowed to publish anything without going through an editor. Because I'm horrible. It really is bad. So I have to pay people now. I mean, I already was, but there's a few of them where I didn't, and it's obvious. All right. Ian, would you like to take number 9 there?
When you're stuck, make a list of what wouldn't happen next. More often than not, the material that gets you unstuck appears.
Yes. I actually utilized this after reading it because I was stuck on a part of an adventure I was developing, and it really it does help. I've only used it once, but it worked. I started chucking off the stuff. I got it to about 6 things before I realized, I know. And that's when I ended up finished with it. So it I can say it works really well.
There's also another thing that I've heard. I forgot which author it was. I know it was a female author who did Sherilyn Kenyon? Maybe. She, or at least one of the female authors out there, said that there comes to a certain point where the characters will honestly dictate the story for you, and all you have to do is just fill it in.
Yes.
And that is, if you always keep in mind what are the characters doing at this point in time, you'll probably end up finding an answer soon enough about what's going
to
happen
next.
And
it's funny you mention that, because I feel like it was recently after a game I told you guys I wanted to try to run a stream where we just improv the whole game. Story, NPCs, everything. Was that recent, or was that a while ago? I don't remember.
I feel like it was recent.
Like, I know, like, the RPG Dungeon World highly encourages people to not prep ahead of time and just springboard off of what the characters come up with their backstories right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds awesome. We're going to have to try that. So, number 10 here is pull apart the stories you like. What do you like about them? What you like in them is part of you. Recognize it before you use it, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I always encourage this. I steal stories and ideas from books, movies, cartoons, any theme.
Source of media.
Memes?
Memes are always good.
Memes.
I'm sure you've seen it on our show before where I took a meme and made it a tip in some way, shape, or form. Because you can take inspiration from anything, especially character concepts. Now, I know there's some douchebag game masters out there who say, I don't want anybody playing a character that exists in another world. Motherfucker, if he wants to play Kirito or wants to play a Superman, let him.
A great example I can think of that is a guy I used to play with was setting up a game of amusement mastermind, a superhero RPG. And he's like, I don't want any anime characters. I don't want any video game characters. I don't want any fantasy characters. And he just went down a list. And I afterwards with a group of friends going, okay, so I make a character who's a robot that copies the abilities of other people. Am I Amazo? Am I Mega Man? Am I...
Yeah, I don't know.
None of those.
So I was like, that is a dumb statement because...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in fact, there can be wrong ways to play.
Oh, yeah. Or GM.
Right.
One thing that I do like about this as well is when it does say, like, pull apart the stories you do like, there are a lot of, like, there was a, oh man, what's the game called? It's called Hello Charlotte. It's pretty underground. Not
is that the one with the blonde headed cart? Is it got like cell shaded?
No,
I must be thinking of something else. I saw this thing with like Charlotte, and it's sorry. Go ahead.
So, Hello Charlotte is based on. At first, it was a big meme. The first game, it's a part of a trilogy, and it's fairly short throughout all of them. It's pretty much just like meme the game. It's about basically a giant parody on all of like classic horror themes. So like, one time they like open up a door and like they're in like this like crazy like otherworldly dimension, and like they open the door and it's like, oh well, nothing happened. And next thing you know, the character next door gets shot in the head, and then time reverses. It's real weird.
That's really cool.
But it's awesome. Now, what's really cool about that is in the second game, the third game, the creator decided to expand on this universe that she had created and didn't realize they were making, which is hilarious. So they ended up creating this weird like multiverse theory accidentally inside their game, because there was this person who looked like them, and it was meant to be just kind of like this weird jokey kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that she realized that she was in like this like weird like meat world. It was so bizarre. This is such a bizarre game. I highly recommend it to anybody. She ended up creating this these concepts where this person that the protagonist is and that the player is actively playing is technically a god of this world, because the player dictates some of the actions that this person can do, even though this person has their own personality and set mm-hmm. of traits. And so there's like an ending in this game where she ends up getting so mad about everything, about all the choices that you and the player have done, that she ends up devouring everything. Like, everything gets consumed into this little ball, and she creates a whole new reality, and then it starts the entire universe over again. She is the god of the universe. So, it's this really weird set of rules that's just like, it all kind of makes sense in this weird way, because there's no way to refute it. She did, in fact, create this timeline that you are a part of.
Isn't it weird that the first thing I thought when you said all that was Madoka Magica?
Yeah.
That's some trippy shit.
It's good.
I remember when I went and seen that when we were at a convention, and I'm like, oh, not another magical girl. Damn, that chick just got her head blown off!
Yeah, like, yeah. Madoka Magica is wild. I love it.
I actually remember when I was dating my ex, she's like, I love Sailor Moon! Let me show you this one series you may or may not like. First couple episodes, this is really good. Episode 4, what the heck did you just show me?
Yeah, that'll
that
happen.
Was one of the
keep going.
That was one of the few animes where I watched it and I started knowing what was going on. I binged it because I wanted to know.
Yeah, it's
what
really good.
Anyways,
yeah.
We're derailing again because we do that. I don't even know who's got the next one.
I think I'm next.
Okay, you're number 12.
Actually, I think I got the next
11.
One. It's been a while since I
like.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Whatever, 11. Doesn't matter.
Why must you sell this toy in... Is this story or toy? It says toy, so I feel like the story's supposed to be...
I don't know, I copied it from somebody else, and I can't proofread it, so... Go with story.
Okay. Yeah, go with story.
Why must you tell the story in particular? What is the belief burning within you that your story feeds off of? That's the heart of it.
Interesting.
This is really good, because I think this is going to be different for every single person. So I like this a lot because I like moral ambiguity. So for me, this question is, why do I want to tell the story? Because I want to know how a character is going to handle this decision. How is it going to affect not just the character, but sometimes the players? I've had a few that get kind of emotional over some decisions that I've put in front of them.
I believe this question is, of course, asking, why do you care? Why would anybody else care?
I don't think it has to be why would anyone else care. It's just why do you care so much
that
you have
why
to write
that? Must you tell
I'm
it.
Kind of tying that into earlier
question, which is about what the audience. Yeah. God dang it. That's too complex for me. My brain hurts.
And for me, because like, for me, the story isn't, I guess the desire for me to be telling a story isn't necessarily like, I don't know. I like the idea that, I just want to create this like weird, entertaining world that people can always have questions like, why does this exist in this certain place? And yet, if you just kind of like look in these like weird like context clues, maybe you'll find it. Maybe not. Right. Maybe it's just this mystery that you just have to speculate on. And maybe it's like, I don't know, maybe it was magic. I guess it was magic as far as I could tell. It's cool.
It works.
And that's kind of like the idea.
Very cool.
Nothing beyond that.
Number 12 is discount the first thing that comes to mind. and the second, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth. I like this. Because basically, those are obvious things that other people have done. And I agree with this. And sometimes the token cliche idea is fine. But when you want to really come up with something unique and tell a really great story, doing something that hasn't been done is probably a better solution.
I do feel like, though, I would treat this one, for me personally, more of a as a guideline than a rule, per se.
Just, I would agree.
Just from the standpoint of sometimes you do come up with a really good idea first thing.
Right.
And sometimes you might also say, like, okay, yes, this is done a lot, or yes, it's really tropey, but sometimes if you do it a really good job of it, or do it in a way that's different enough or well-executed enough, people still might appreciate it.
Yeah, like, why reinvent the wheel kind of thing.
Right. And
yeah.
Sometimes tropes keep popping up because...
they are good.
Or people like those.
Yeah.
I'll pick up the next one.
Sure. Awesome. Give your characters opinions. A character being passive or malleable is easy for you as a writer, but it's poison to your audience. Now, I think we can all kind of agree to that. I'm sure we've seen, like, protagonists in video games, honestly, where the... even though you're, like, actively controlling this character, it doesn't feel like they have any impact at all. And that's kind of a big thing. Most notably that I can think of immediately is in, like, any of, the, like, the newer Fire Emblem titles where the protagonist is kind of, like, they kind of play a hand in the story, but really they don't matter. They're just kind of a plot device, yeah.
Or a great example of that is actually the first BioShock game. Like, I'm not going to give it away the huge plot twist that happens in the middle, but up to a point, you believe that you're making all of your decisions, even though you're on the rails, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
But then they give a plot twist like, oh, so I was really being manipulated this whole time into doing this one thing.
Mm. And, that
and
makes...
it does it in a way like, I got to buy that, actually. And then now kind of, it was kind of a commentary.
So right, right.
Too, but yeah.
But I think that works in specific because of the fact that You yourself aren't being passive, per se, and you're not, to your understanding, to the audience's understanding, they're not being made malleable. They actively feel like they have these decisions, right? It's almost like they assume they have that power until you pull the rug out from under them and they realize, nope, they do not. That's kind of the idea.
What I take away from this is that it's referencing characters who have no opinion. Don't engage with decisions or splits or
right.
They just kind of go with the story and they're
kind of just a body.
Yeah, but they don't do nothing and fill space. And I think that that's the worst kind of character ever. They're boring and not exciting at all.
That's fair.
So, Ian, you want to take number 14?
Number 14. What is the essence of your story? What's the most economical way of telling of it? If you know that, you can build up from there.
I think this goes back to one of the previous ones about what's the core of your story and trim out all the fat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that's very similar to that.
Yeah.
Economical is them just trying to save money, it seems. Or, you know, get rid of excess stuff that they don't need.
And mm-hmm.
I think that that's a good one.
It sounds like it's just saying, like, again, like, what is the theme of your story, almost. Yeah.
Stick with it.
Yeah.
If you were your character in this situation, how would you feel? Honesty lends credibility to unbelievable situations.
This is huge. Oh, man. This is if you're trying to write out this, like, because I want to believe that most humans, to some degree, have some form of empathy and mm-hmm. have some altruistic views.
I wish.
Again, I want to hope, but it's that, like, honesty and that idea. Like, so, for instance... let's create a situation here. If you you had to almost kind of like two people are going to like fall off the cliff at the same time, you have to choose one kind of thing. Now, to the character, you have to put it in their eyes, right? So you have to put something that maybe one thing as a person you wouldn't know how to, or maybe as the character you don't really know how they would answer it, right? And I think that's kind of what they're trying to get at. But you, as the audience member in this case, because you're thinking in the eyes of the character, the audience of this character, you have an idea of, you know, honestly, I would probably choose this. And maybe that is a way for you to kind of gauge, like maybe the character would also think the same in that vein then, right?
Right.
Because then if you think this, is it really that far-fetched that they would also think this?
It's funny, and I don't know if you've seen the Hunter anime.
Yep.
But when they're taking the Hunter exam, one of it is you need to answer a question. Mm-hmm. And the question is, your lover and your mother are both dying in a fire. You can only save one. Who do you save? And this is a question that they have like 5 seconds to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, the one guy is still sitting there looking. He didn't answer because he's a young kid. And he's like, "You were good. You don't have to answer." He's like, "Yeah, but what would I do in that situation? Like, really, if it happened, it's theoretical now. But what? Mm-hmm. How do you decide?" And I think that this really touches on the fact that you're giving credence to a decision that a character makes based on if it's something you think you could see being done. And it really brings them to life, I think.
I agree. That's what I was just going to say. Like, it really kind of brings, it kind of breathes more life into him because you're like, you know, no person would probably be able to answer that in about 5 seconds.
Right.
At least I would hope not. Maybe you need to fix some stuff. But
you got to take number 16.
Number 16. What are the stakes? Give us a reason to root for the character. What happens if he doesn't succeed? Stack the odds against him.
I like this. What do you think?
There needs to be something the character's working towards. And there has to be a chance for it to fail. If there's no chance for it to fail, then what's the point? Why are we caring?
Yeah, if there's no risk, like, and you've seen many movies where a volcano erupts and it's running towards a town, and so you got to do whatever you can to divert it, right?
Yeah.
If there's no town, that becomes much less exciting.
Yeah, why divert it? Why not just let it hit the water?
Right. So by putting a town there, now there's risk. If the character fails, they are going to, hundreds of people are going to die. And it's a high stakes because it's a effing volcano.
And now you might be thinking, well, why would I care about the town? Well, make them, and like the past like hour ago before this was all happening, experience the town. What's nice about the town? Why... maybe they met the mayor of that town, and maybe they got good to be good friends with them, and now they're all, you know, happy and buddy-buddy.
Or...
Bobbin the Goblin lives there!
Or, if the place burns down, or melts, or whatever happens when, you know, it's hit by lava, instead it turns out they choose not to, to help it because of being douches, and they find out something of significant value, somebody of super importance, an important contact, something that can help them, was in there and is no longer available to them. That'll really suck. Oh, we chose not to help these people in distress. Oh, now we don't have that really dope-ass sword that'll help us slay that dragon. Well, that's our fault. Now, oh, we just lost 3 of our 5 guys fighting this dragon. Man, well, I wish I would have saved those people and got that sword. So
one big thing that I can actually, I can recall with this point, actually, is, again, another book. Because
should read more,
helps.
People.
Yeah.
Reading is good.
If any of you have ever read A Darker Shade of Magic by V.E. Schwab, one of the main characters, like, binds his soul to his brother. And that's because cool. His brother was going to die, he was stabbed in the heart. And so he was like, holy shit, I want to save my brother, what can I do? And so he's, like, one of the most powerful beings in the world, and he's like, why can't I heal my brother? Why is he not coming back to life? It's because he was stabbed in the fucking heart. He's going to die. so he did something that was... forbidden, and he didn't even realize he was doing it for some of the part. He didn't realize that he was doing this kind of very questionable thing with the magic, because the magic in that world is very living, and it does have almost a conscience of its own.
That's cool.
And he was like, oops, I just, like, soul-bound me to my brother. So now everything we feel, we kind of both feel together, and, like, we kind of, like, influence each other's, like, actions and
stuff.
Wasn't
there, like, a Cheech and Chong flick that was about that? Like, you tickle one brother and the other one laughs?
Yeah. Very similar.
The first thing I thought about when we read this point was when Joss Whedon was talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. When Buffy's having a good day, the show's good. When Buffy is suffering, the show's great!
That's funny. So what is the next one? 16?
17.
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that me?
Yep.
I think it's you. I don't know.
No work is ever wasted, and if it's not working, let it go and move on. If it's useful, it'll show up again. As a DM, I experience this often. There's a lot of things that I write, but I never use. Mm-hmm. And then I go back. I was like, I think I wrote something. That'd be great for this. And I can just toss it right into the campaign I'm going.
Yep.
Or running.
In a similar vein, I kind of always like believe, I think it's okay for somebody in the group to suggest a bad idea. Because then people realize, that's a bad idea. Don't do that. If that makes any sense at all.
It does.
Very simple point.
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah. You have to know yourself and know the difference between doing your best and being fussy. Story is testing, not refining.
I like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, there can be a fine line between the two of those sometimes.
I feel like it's. I'm taking this as, it's okay to write garbage.
Yeah.
Try something new. Mm-hmm. If it's garbage, you won't use it again.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of trying to, okay, this is garbage, how can I make it not garbage? Just write it as it is, and then if it's garbage, don't ever do that again. That's kind of what I'm taking away from that.
Yep. Right.
So,
I like this next point.
Who's got that? Is that all?
I think that's Ian, yep.
Coincidences that get characters into trouble are great. Coincidences that get them out of it is cheating.
Yes.
a very good point that a lot of, I feel like, shows tend to do the second one, where they're like, oh, but this happened, so now they're fine.
I would say with the second point, I by and large agree, but it comes down to execution.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I like the odds of just random chance getting the characters into deep shit. Like, that's why I like D&D, because the dice determines a lot of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They could walk across the ledge, no problem. You throw in a dice in there for a chance for them to fall on to their death, it all of a sudden becomes far more interesting. But if that ledge breaks and they happen to grab onto a vine that happens to be 10 feet below them, that's kind of cheating, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They could have taken any number of different ways to get around to where they were going. They chose this path, so.
Right. It's a good one. You're next.
Am I? Okay.
Yep.
20. Exercise. Well, this excludes me. I can't do this. Otherwise, I wouldn't be fat still. Take the building blocks of a movie you dislike. How would you rearrange them into what you do like?
Ooh.
That's really good, because we all have something that sucked.
Yeah.
Let's talk Avatar that got M. Night shit upon.
We don't speak of that movie.
Yeah. Big pile of dung.
I feel like there's a lot.
So what would you do to make it better? I would just get rid of it. I would follow the stories. I would, you know.
The biggest thing was it tried to compress a full entire one season show into 2 hours.
So
well,
you would,
that's one thing of many issues that I had, mind you, but.
Anyway, so for this, I think this is good. Because you can utilize what makes a movie or a story bad. And I'm just going to continue on the Avatar train. In the movie, the animations were slow, clunky, and not like the story was designed. So for me, if I was to rewrite that, I would increase the speed and the fluidity of the combat. So I can totally see using that as a tool for my storytelling.
Or I can spin this in a different direction, say the Aragorn movie.
Yes, that was a great series and books. The movie was much to be desired, but in and of its own self wasn't a bad movie.
Well, yes, it was.
It wasn't. It was a good movie.
No, it was terrible.
It was good. Did you read Aragorn book first?
Yes.
That's why.
No.
I came in the other direction, so it wasn't nearly as bad.
Okay, let me put it this
you
way.
You seen it?
I have seen the movie, but it's been a long time, so I don't recall much from it anymore.
All right, the big plot twist early on was, this stone's a dragon egg. But the way the characters early on were treating it, were acting as if it was a stone, even dialogue-wise. I'm like, but they knew it was a dragon
even
egg the
though
whole
they
time.
Knew it, yeah.
Why did they call it a stone?
I got you.
I can go on, but you get the point.
Yeah.
That's just one small... yeah.
I got you. So, do you agree with this this exercise here?
Yes.
I think it could work,
Take the
sure.
building blocks of movies and that you dislike and rearrange them into something you do like?
Yeah.
What can make this work?
Some require way more work. Yeah, go ahead and take 22. We'll have Ian get the last one.
Identify with your situation characters. Don't write cool. What would make you act that way? Interesting.
So, this goes back to having characters show, not tell. My character's just cool. What is he doing to make him cool?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he likes to stand up in the corner with his leg put up against the wall with a giant reed sticking out of his mouth with his hat pulled down. Kind of.
There's a giant party going on and he is not actively participating.
Right. That's what makes him cool. This very much
to me
is
follow the crowd.
is a show don't tell sort of mentality, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. Do you guys got any other examples or?
But yeah, I definitely agree. Don't tell people that this guy is cool. Make them believe it.
Mm-hmm. I think we had a player tip on that once, yep. actually.
Yeah.
Way back in the good old days.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Who's got the last one, Austin?
Ian does.
Putting it on paper only allows you to start fixing it. If a perfect idea stays in your head, you'll never share it with anyone.
Yes. I recently went through the RPG workshop group kind of class in July, and one of the things that really did push is write. It doesn't have to be in any controlled format. It can just be spew diarrhea of the mouth. Put it on page, because if it stays up here, you're liable to forget it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never share that with anybody. But as soon as it's on paper, you can always go back and reference it.
I think it was Neil Gaiman who said something along the lines of like, so some author was asking about what is a good tip to be a writer, and Neil Gaiman of all people replied back, during your first draft, write down everything that happens, and then write your second draft connecting all of them together, and then show it to people so it seems like it knows what you're doing.
There you go.
Different approaches, of course, but...
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any points on this?
No, that's good.
Carpet again. I wear shades indoors and at night.
That's fair.
That's really funny.
That's a good one.
All right, that'll do it for our main topic. Pixar's rules for storytelling. This is only 22 samples. There is an entire book of ideas mm-hmm. that I think a game master and a player can get a whole lot of use out of. So you can find a link to that at critacademy.com/post/episode183. Before we move on to our unearthed tips and tricks, we have another gift to give away. Compliments of Jeff Stevens.
A masked menace terrifies a region, raiding villages to fund her devious plans. Unknowingly, the adventurers stumble into her most recent evil scheme, the kidnapping of a famous performer known as Devon Artis. Their mission is to deliver a ransom and collect Devon. Though, as in most cases, not all goes as planned.
Yep. If you guys haven't picked up any of Jeff's stuff, man, the guy, his writing team and himself are fantastic. You need to swoop by and check this stuff out.
It's good stuff.
Who is our winner today?
Our winner today is R.S. Lape, 1992.
All that jazz.
Or R. Slape, I don't know.
Congratulations, R. Slape 1992. If you enjoy the product, please leave Jeff Stevens a review. Every review helps other people find the product and lets everyone know what you thought of his writing, and hopefully making him even more popular and badass than he already is. If you didn't win, have no fear. Head on over to critacademy.com/Jeff Stevens. Get Villains and Lairs 3 and Encounters on the Savage Seas 3. Free!
Free.
Compliments of Jeff Stevens.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Our first UTT is our character concept. Which one of you wrote this?
Don't think it was me.
Would you like to tell us about the character concept?
It was totally me that wrote this. Today's character concept, the accidental hero.
I love it.
You are the kind of person that is hailed by all as a great hero across the land, and people of all walks of life speak of your great deeds. People remember when you saved a king from an invisible assassin. You are well regarded for finding the lost Staff of Valor, which was believed to be destroyed. You are praised for even slaying the red dragon that harried the lands. What you don't tell people is when you were target shooting at the range, you missed a target, and it happened to strike the invisible assassin trying to kill the king. You also don't mention that you happened to trip and faceplant onto the brick in the wall that happened to trigger the hidden passage that opened up, revealing the staff from where it was. And you most definitely do not mention that the dragon choked to death on your horse when they ate it.
That's awesome.
People, you assume you are mighty from all this, but you're too much of a coward to admit what really happened especially since you always somehow make you fail upwards.
That is fantastic.
I love the term failing upwards.
I failed really in the right way.
It really sells it.
Oh, I love it.
That's awesome.
This very much reminded me of, was King inspiration for this at all?
No.
Okay, because in if you haven't seen One Punch Man,
it definitely reminds me of King. That, yeah.
The most legendary hero.
He's
the top,
like some fraud.
Yeah, he's a fraud. He just happens to be in the right place when the real hero is kicking ass.
What a good time.
And then everybody shows up, sees King next to the monster's corpse. This guy killed that monster! And he's like too afraid to admit.
He's good at video games, though.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, the main inspiration was this when the Warhammer parody Brava Elphaboosa.
Oh, that's right. Did you just show us that?
I linked it to you guys.
Oh, I did watch that then.
Released their parody video for Caiaphas King. He's a war... who's a hero character in the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire video's like, Caiaphas King is awesome! He did a tactical withdrawal, the orcs followed him, where he lured him into a canyon, and then he fired into the weak spot on the wall, causing a cave and killing the orc horde! Yes, yes, I fought hard, people, by himself. Oh my gosh, all I did was run away like a coward, and then just friendly fired at the guy orcs chasing me! I didn't even know there's a weak spot in the wall!
Oh, this really fits well to me with, like, the lucky feat, the lucky feature that halflings have. I know yes. Carpageddon's talking about that. You can really build a great concept around this. I feel like it would be really fun to play a monk that's like this, who hurts people on accident, you know what I mean? It would be really great. I like this concept. The accidental hero.
I think part of it, though, is how you portray your actions, or what you say in hindsight, or maybe a little bit like get work with the DM on that one, yeah. But still.
That'd be a lot of fun. Because the DM can definitely help make it fail. Would it fail upward?
Fail upward.
Fail upward. I love it. That'll do it for our character concept, the accidental hero. That's a really good one.
If you don't remember anything else from this podcast, always fail upward.
There's no flavor for the monster in here.
No.
I think it got shared, but I don't think it got copied, and that's okay. Our monster variant of the podcast is the Prowling King, or TPK for short. This comes from our Crit Nation community Facebook group, posted by Charles Koontz. I love this. He posted a picture of basically a tiger that looks like it had sex with a centaur.
I found it. I typed it out, but you guys didn't say anything one way or another for it, so I didn't do anything.
Yeah, if it's bad, I'll tell you. I'd be like, no, that sucks. Which isn't usually how it is, because it's less work I got to do. So can you tell us a little bit about this Goro-looking mother effer?
There are many creatures in the world that are horrors, not just to the common man, but to the adventurers as well. Sometimes even more heinous creatures can be produced when magic is involved, or when two different species produce an offspring. One of these came to be when a weird tiger and a centaur mixed, producing the monstrosity that stalks the woods, that those who live to tell the tale refer to as the Prowling King.
I love it.
Also known as TPK.
That is...
I love it. So
unideal.
Right? Or Zeus was involved.
Oh, or Zeus goodness. Was involved.
The origin stat block you're going to use is the Chimera. You're going to lose the Flying, the Fire Breath, and the Horns. The new features you're going to give it is Keen Smell, which gives it advantage on Wisdom Perception checks that rely on smell, and you're going to give him Pounce. Now, it's worth noting, this guy has four arms and four legs, right? So he runs on all fours, and he's got four extras. So he's got eight limbs, like a spider.
Like a spider.
So we're going to give him the Pounce so that when the Prowling King moves at least 15 feet forward and hits a creature with its claw attack in the same turn, it must succeed a DC 15 saving throw or fall prone. So, knocking shit to the ground, right?
Already on it, cool.
You're going to give him a really cool feature called Sentinel. So, when he hits a creature with an opportunity attack, the creature's speed becomes zero for the rest of the rest of the turn. And the big change is you're going to give him claws. You're going to edit his claws to include a grapple that requires a DC check of 15 on a larger or smaller. The king doesn't... King cannot use this when it has four other creatures grappled. So, basically, this monstrosity can hold three people at once and still beat their face in, which is fascinating. So, in my mind, I'm envisioning charging on all fours, smashing into somebody, and then knocking them to the ground and then grappling them, and then running to another person, grappling them, and holding all of them pinned to the ground so he has advantage on all of his attacks.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Nothing being nasty.
I was going to say, this thing's a nightmare.
Yeah, the picture that they shared was just so inspiring. I wanted to give it a whole bunch of other things, but I decided that's probably too much.
Probably make it a little too strong. It's like, maybe not.
But I'm a big fan of grappling, and once you pin somebody down to the ground, and they have disadvantage on their attacks, he can easily hold three players or NPCs or characters or whatever to the ground and take very much lower damage.
I really don't think a lot of people appreciate grappling until they're on the receiving end of it.
Yep.
I actually just got an amazing email. I'll read it after the show because I think you guys will like it. It was from a listener, and it's all about grappling. And I got like, when I got... when I read it,
grappling's just fun.
Yes, and it's so funny because I used when 5e, even now, people say, "Oh, grappling is stupid and only makes your movement zero." I was like, "Dude, when somebody can't move and they can't stand up, they're at your mercy." Mm-hmm. Because being prone is such a punishing condition.
In melee range, at least.
Yeah, it's a defensive,
and it's
skill.
Also a really fun way to stop flyers from flying away with you.
Oh, yeah, this little bastard again grappled a flyer in the air, and they just both fell out of the sky right to the ground.
I was like, I really don't want to be dropped, so I'll just drop myself.
It worked. Higher. It worked. You guys really, that was a fun fight. At least it was for me.
I got bodied. Are you kidding me?
You seem to be the frontline fighter, though. I mean, the other paladin kind of, I mean, you got two paladins who have zero ranged abilities.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Got knocked unconscious.
Oh, he did get his...
Oh, yeah, he got killed by four imps.
He had a little imp, like, celebrating on his chest, like,
yeah, I had to throw a javelin at it while I was grappling.
And he had Merle off in this corner doing his own thing.
Blasting some shit. All right, that'll do it for our monster variant, the Prowling King. Austin, would you...
He's about the chat.
He's like, I got knocked out by an imp! It was so funny because they popped out of stealth. They were invisible.
Yeah.
And so when he killed three of them, the one went invisible and he just kind of forgot about it. So it ambushed him. Do you want to tell us about our, do you want the encounter or you want the weapon?
I love weapons, but I'll do the encounter.
It's okay. Fine. Why don't you tell us about the encounter of the podcast?
So the encounter today is the Master's Amulet, which can always be fun. Because you know, if you've played any RPG ever, our amulets tend to have magic powers strapped to them.
Love it.
The characters are hired by Shamil Stumbleduck.
Dude, I suck at name random generators, man. I love it.
Looks like
Stumbleduck.
Female lawful good gnome mage. Her shield guardian seems to have started malfunctioning, a result of damage during an attack on her tower. The attack came from a group of elite drow. While she was able to fend off the assault, a drow mage escaped. She needs to get the magical amulet that she uses to control the construct prepared. Unfortunately, she is missing three key spell components, one of which, the amulet, was stolen in the attack. The characters must track and hunt down the drow mage and retrieve the damaged amulet. The second item the characters need is a, oh boy, hemispherical piece of clear crystal, and finally a matching hemispherical piece of gum... Arabic?
Yes. Yeah, that's a thing in the book. I pulled that right from the book. So.
Okay. A character who succeeds on a DC 21 intelligence arcana check, or if they know the spell, Autoluke's resilient sphere identifies these materials as key components for the particular spell. One designed to imprison creatures, a character who succeeds on a DC 19 wisdom survival check, recalls trekking through a cavern at the base of a waterfall and seeing clear crystal stalactites. Oh my goodness, I'm having a troubled time today.
Story of my life, it's okay. You're doing good, keep it up.
A character who succeeds on a DC 19 wisdom nature check recalls that Arabic gum is a favored treat of tree ants. likely they can locate a tree ant and ask for some of the hardened sap-like material. Lastly, or maybe finally, the characters will have to get each material cut into two hemispherical shapes. If a character has proficiency with a set of artisan tools, such as carpenter tools or similar, they can craft and shape the material themselves with a successful DC 16 check. Likewise, if they have an access to a fabricate spell or similar magical effect, they can also create it. If not, they need to seek out a smithy or a similar NPC to have the work done for a fee of 250 gold pieces, taking a 10-day. Yep. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I just like the entire setting of it, honestly. It's the characters always like to be hired by somebody because that means that they get paid for it. And they immediately know that there's some form of reward at the end, right?
Right.
And
what about the scavenging hunt? It's a scavenge hunt, basically.
Yeah. kind of like a somewhat like a fetch quest, but at least you get to like go out and actually like, they aren't like super hard and they're not super intrusive, honestly. So I'm not really worried about that.
Right.
And I do kind of like how it kind of sets you off into like these different like settings that you kind of need to go through.
My goal in this is one of the longer encounters I wrote because I wanted it to tackle all three pillars of play.
Okay.
Exploration by finding the crystal, the clear crystals.
Mm-hmm.
The role play aspect by looking out and speaking to and coming to an agreement with a treant, and of course, attacking and fighting a drow mage.
Yeah.
I had never wrote anything that included all three in one little section.
Yeah, it definitely works. There's
really wanted
for
to go for
to
that
like.
Whole scavenger hunt feel. So.
Yeah.
Yep, I was thinking creation.
Okay. All right, that'll do for our encounter of the podcast, the Master's Amulet.
Pretty good.
That whole idea came right from the... I took the flavor right from the Shield Guardian. Talks about like a controlling thing. I'm like, I bet I can do something with that. Monsters are a great source for inspiration for hooks. Ian, would you like to tell us about our magic item?
Our magic item today is Arrow of the Monk. It's a, well, honestly, an arrow. It's an uncommon.
Not a sign, like for a bow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Monastery monks created the Arrow of the Monk to repel intruders from their home. They imbued them with their own key energy. These sleek arrows have a small wooden fist carved into their end that stores their energy, releasing its power on impact. Talk about I cast fist. Or in this case, I shoot fist.
Yeah, this is literally I shoot fist.
It's a green arrow attack, man.
Oh my god.
Make a ranged weapon attack against the target. On the hit, the target takes 1d10 force damage. Hit or miss, the arrow explodes. The target and each creature within 5 feet must succeed on a con save or take 2d6 force damage and be knocked back 10 feet.
It's basically a boxing glove on the end of an arrow.
Yeah, it's literally just the boxing glove on the end of an arrow that explodes.
I was watching a scene from the old Smallville, and he meets Green Arrow and he shoots him with this guy with an arrow, and it sends out a powerful electrical shockwave that knocks him back. And he's like, "What was that? What were you expecting? A boxing glove on the end of an arrow?" I'm like, I want to make that.
That's pretty good. I like it.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. I think this is probably the first arrow we've made. I'm starting
at
to
least
work.
Since I've been here.
Yeah, I'm more or less trying to come up with more consumable items aside from just like the potions and stuff and ammunition. Even if you don't track normal ammunition, tracking special ammunition is not as difficult.
No.
Yeah.
And especially as a player, you know, collects them and saves them for that one moment where it's a perfect tool.
Right.
So that'll do it for our magic item, the Arrow of the Monk. Our Dungeon Master tip is loot freely. From James Wyatt. Loot freely. For instance, you don't have to be running a game set in the world of Eberron to find something worth using in Eberron Rising of the Last War setting book.
It's true.
Yeah.
Maybe the idea of characters with dragon marks tied to a mysterious prophecy fits in with the ideas you have for your own campaign.
Yes, please.
Letting your characters take dragon mark feats and then pitting them against agents of the Chamber of the Lords of Dust makes everyone at the table happy.
Yep.
I agree with this. I mean, it'd be cool. You guys are these prophesized heroes and you realize that you have these like marks that are just on like your arms and stuff. You're like, I don't know what this is. And you go up to some mage. He's like, I have no idea what the hell that is. You're infected with something. I don't know.
Go see a doctor.
Yeah. Go see a plague doctor.
And going off the tips that they put in the Eberron source book, actually, there's multiple planes. So stuff moves around between the set planes. So stuff from one can show up in another. So
you just see a person in favor with like a pot of coffee and they're just like, oh, fuck this place.
I don't know how we managed to miss this, but Carbageddon says that arrow really packs a punch.
Yeah. Of course it does.
So what do you guys think about this? I mean, it makes sense.
Yep. It does. And with all like the plane shifting and literal time travel, all the characters can do, how is this not out of the realm of speculation?
Right,
let's be honest.
Right. I agree.
Kind of in that same vein, I've lost count how many times I have people saying, that stuff does not exist in this fantasy world. I'm like, really? Because we got magic and dragons and even, like, aliens from a different plane that suck your brain out. And that's the thing that bugs you?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, people are like that with dark vision.
My thing is like, you could totally make, like, a character concept out of this. Maybe you have, like, some time-traveling rogue. or like plane shifting rogue, there's where like he goes out and makes deals in like different planes of existence. He's like, here, I'll trade you this magical sword for a pot of coffee. He's like, oh yeah, dude.
There's a background, I think, in Xanathar's that fits that, like the Wayward Traveler, or is no, it's in the Skag. It's in the Sword Coast Adventures Guide. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
The Far Traveler, I think, is what it's called.
I know I've read it.
But it basically, it opens up your story for that exact sort of character concept.
Hmm.
I know, because my buddy Troy always takes it to explain why his weird-ass characters are in campaign settings.
If it works. I like it.
That'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip of the podcast.
Loot freely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You beat me to it. Our player tip of the podcast is, don't be a dick. And you can avoid dickitude by mastering that martial training with that uber sneak attack.
I love
uber. I did change this a little bit because I think it could bend two player tips.
And I told you, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So do you want to take this? I know I normally do that.
All right. Martial training, uber sneak attack.
Uber sneak attack.
Without question, one of the defining traits of the rogue is sneak attack.
Yeah.
Can concur.
It's potent on its own, which is awesome, but there's plenty of ways to get more mileage out of it. A great way to do that is combining it with other effects that stack with it.
Rogues are stacked.
Yep. A couple examples. The effects of the cantrips, Green Flame Blade, or Booming Blade, both of which use a regular weapon attack as its trigger, which also happens to be one of the triggers needed for a sneak attack.
Yes, it's actually pretty awesome, especially if you consider that rogues never get multi-attack.
Yep.
So they're not being punished by using a cantrip.
And keep in mind, these two being cantrips, they level up with your character.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what your spellcasting ability is. Well, that's not true, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because they use your weapon attack, not a spell attack.
Yeah. I mean, it messes a little bit with Green Flame Blade because it
for
goes
damage.
Off your, yeah, but yeah.
So, but not every rogue has access to spells.
Oh, there's a wizard around that.
Oh yeah, like what?
Well, for one thing, you could just, play as the Arcane Trickster archetype, which is kind of a cheat right there, because I'm also an archetype, but you can also choose the High Elf race, which gets cantrips just for being a High Elf! Or you can also take the Magic Initiate feat, which gives you cantrips!
Yes. Yeah, Magic Initiate's really good.
And also, you can increase the odds even more by, remember, sneak attacks can only be used once per turn. But there's also more than one turn in a round, because it's not just your turn.
That's actually a big point, because you can put yourself in a situation where you are surrounded by more enemies, and if you can work with your group to make it in a situation where the enemies are going to trigger your op attacks.
Yes, that's right. Backstab an op attack.
Yes. I think the easiest way is if you can convince a battle master to take the, is it Commander Strike?
Sounds about right.
They can give up their attack to give it to the rogue. And no amount of weapon damage that a sword and board style fighter is going to do is going to out-damage what a rogue can do.
Especially when it has Booming Blade.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that gives you great maneuverability, and you can hit multiple targets. Green Flame Blade, I think you can hit multiple targets.
It hits all things like adjacent to it.
One target, I believe.
Is it just based one?
On,
maybe it's one.
Based on like your charisma score, your spellcasting modifier, whatever.
It starts off as your spellcasting modifier, but then it increases in dice as you level up.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's also the Booming Blade. Once you hit, it does damage if they move only, I think.
Yes, but when you level up, you add dice both to the initial attack and when they move.
Which is beautiful.
Good old Booming Blade.
So imagine when you crit on that sucker.
Well, and that's the other thing. That's a good point, because Booming Blade, if they move, they take an attack. But if you engage an enemy by themselves and then use your bonus act, your cunning action to disengage, you leave them by themselves. So either they got to make ranged attacks now, or they got to trigger that effect. Mm-hmm. So very cool.
I like it.
Good stuff. Sorry, we did most of the talking. Did you have any thoughts on that?
I was just thinking what could universe would be like. Wow, imagine if this rogue was a paladin, and now you can add smites to your sneak attack.
Yeah.
There's other options. That's what I said.
Think about that.
It was brought up.
Yeah, he actually sent me a big thing, but I broke it into several, so you'll probably see this discussion come up more.
I was just thinking, like, huh, a rogue that smites demons. That's weird.
Yeah, but it works. Like it. It'll work.
We'll talk about that. The Holy Order. What part of Holy Order goes into the shadows? This one. Stabs him real quick.
Knife to the face in the name of my God.
I was always sad that the paladins couldn't smite with ranged attacks.
It makes sense. What
I would
do you
love
mean?
To be able to throw daggers at people, hit them in the eye, an
It'd
explosion
so
of holy
good,
light.
But here's the thing, though. Hexblades can do that. Hexblades can do that.
Because they get a similar thing that's the smite, right?
Yep, and you can use it with your pack weapon, and when you choose the right invocation, your pack weapon can be a bow.
Love it.
Improved pack weapon.
Well,
I'm
going to have to look into that. Send me a message. I think that could be a good player tip. I'm going to look into that.
Yep.
Yeah.
We can't give away all of our
stuff immediately.
All right, I think that'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by mastering that martial training of that uber sneak attack.
By not being a dick.
That'll do it for our show today. Thank you all for joining us. Please, hopefully you'll join us next episode where we'll be discussing armaments of legacy.
Does it mean I'm even getting like cool pauldrons?
No.
Damn it.
No, I don't know. I was a big fan of legacy weapons in 3.5, which basically gave quests and stories to unlock the power within certain weapons and all this stuff.
Yeah, I realize that's not really in 5e, is it?
No. And actually, it's funny. I just had to cross this off of my list of things to write because somebody just did it good. Because it was one of the things I wanted to convert.
Hey, it works.
All right, so we'll be talking about that. I'm really excited.
Woo! If you have any feedback on our tips and tricks or topics you would like us to discuss, please send them to us. You can email them to us at critacademy@gmail.com or find us at Twitter and Facebook at Crit Academy.
Holy Order, H-O-L-E-Y. Holy, get it? Because you're stabbing them? Holy,
stabbing
I get
them
it. That's
over
funny.
That's
good. A good one.
Make someone holy by perforating your organs.
I like it. I'm about it.
Alrighty. We hope you've enjoyed your experience here at Crit Academy, and if you did, you can help others find the show by leaving a, hopefully, 5-star review on iTunes, or just send us a message telling us how much you enjoyed the show. And also, be sure to give us a like and a share.
Woo!
Especially a share.
Make sure to subscribe to our show at CritAcademy.com, follow us on YouTube at youtube.com/c/CritAcademy. Please subscribe, hit that notification bell so you know when we go live, all that jazz. Also, make sure to subscribe at our website where we send blog posts, our show notes, and some other shit anytime we do some cool stuff. And you also get my favorite resources as for signing up. You can also be entered to win cool prizes each and every single week when you do sign up, so do that. Make sure to check out our fellowship members there as well. If you have not checked out Interparty Conflict, Gabe and Jeff put together an absolutely stellar, high-quality show. I wish I could get my stuff as to the quality that they have, but I am not an audio technician, and no matter how many times I set this shit up, it just doesn't work right. So, you know, there's that. but their content's amazing. Their discussions are awesome. Please check them out. Also, head on over to, if you have Twitter, check out The Kind GM. The guy does great work. His blogs are full of awesome.
Woo!
That'll do it for our show today. Please, if you're interested, please consider checking out our Kickstarter at CritAcademy.com. We're really excited. At the very least, by checking it out, you'll be able to get a couple memorable monsters for you to bring with you to your in your stories and campaigns.
And if that doesn't work out for you, go to Facebook and just type in on the search bar memorable monsters. You'll probably find it there.
Yep, there we have a group for it, and there's a link there to get that stuff too. So, all right. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes.